SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very overcast and threatening New Orleans. Why is it that we can never get these big Saturdays at fairgrounds? Why can it never get through without some threat and some concern? There's really no rain in the forecast today or tomorrow, but boy, it certainly looks misty. I might as well turn on this weekend preview at the races. Risen Star Day tomorrow and Sirius 219, XM 201, and Sports Zone 964. If you're listening online or at stevebick.com, and say good morning to Frank McGooey, who doesn't get any more local than Frank. Good morning.
That's right. Good morning, Steve. I'm a lifer.
Well, what's the story with this? Is this a problem?
Yeah, this is pretty normal. Okay. It'll clear up a little bit this afternoon, I'm expecting. Burns off, but we should be okay.
All right, because, I mean, all week it looked like it was going to be a perfect, 65, 70.
Yeah, no,
70,
I think we'll be good. We'll have a big crowd tomorrow, too.
I would think. In fact, I took a picture yesterday when I came downstairs. We're on the sixth floor, the fifth floor. There's a dining room. I walked into that dining room. You would have thought it was Derby Day. The place was packed.
Right. Well, no football going on. This is a football town, so people are excited to come out to the races.
Well, the football, you bring up football, the pitchforks and the torchlights were out on that front. The NFL offices are lucky they weren't burned down.
It's funny. If you got horse racing in your life, it's a lot easier to turn the page on something like that.
Right.
I really felt for these people suing to try to get a game replayed.
That was
all this
great.
Nonsense.
That was
right.
Great.
The next day, I was worried about who was going to win a double, and I was past it.
You know the name, of course. You've heard Pete and I talk about Frank, and not just Frank, brother Pat as well, and, of course, the pair of remarkable BC wins, and Frank is you're a professional player.
Right. Well, I've got a 9 to 12 gig, we'll call it, not a 9 to 5 gig. I'm a member of the before post time club. I start early and try to wrap it up early. I spent a lot of time with the horses. Like anybody that's successful has to. You got to be successful.
Got to work at it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Just came from Vegas, of course, and still kind of in the aftershock of the NHC. And I do have to ask, before we dive into expectations for the card tomorrow, you have that good, solid foundation on Friday and felt like you were in great shape going into Saturday.
I did. And halfway through Saturday, I was in the top 20, and I still had like 8 picks to go. And I felt good, and I was sitting with at the table next to Paul and Duke and those guys. They were all in position. Both of Paul's entries were. And, it just started raining long shots the last 2 hours of that contest. And I couldn't connect with anything. And we all wound up not making the cut.
Which was a little shocking, I mean, to be honest.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought I was sitting comfortably.
When that happens, all these cap horses and then not just cap horses, there were horses that were coming in at 12-1, 14-1, and those are really helpful,
right?
Because they're when you pick them, you feel reasonable as opposed to desperate reaching for 28-1 shots.
Correct. You and I, so I had seen you Saturday morning. And told you I thought I was okay because I thought most of the mandatories were fairly formful. And for the most part of the day, they were.
Except for the one. And
right.
It came at a bad time for a lot of people.
A real bad time. And I had a funny feeling in the race at Gulfstream, the horse that got DQ'd. I'm trying to remember. The Ian Wilkes horse. They got DQ'd from second.
From second and pushed that price up to third.
Right. I was on him in the contest and when he got DQ'd. When he got DQ'd, I just said, you know what? That's not a good sign. Something bad's about that.
It's going
wrong.
It
started raining. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because early on Saturday, there was a price at either Laurel. I've got all the records, and I haven't had a chance to really, kind of earmark what was – certain moments, but there was an early $30 horse, and there was a smattering, and I said to Roger Satina, I said, and Roger actually had a horse kind of loom up, have a kind of bad start and loom up and a price. And I knew right away, and I think Roger knew right from his first play,
right,
that it wasn't going to be, it wasn't going to happen. And,
yeah,
and it's funny how that you just sort
got
of
that feeling.
You just sort
you got
of
the
know.
Feeling it turned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, and a quick aside about the way that final table ended up, and the tumultuousness and the, you know, the exciting, you know, way the, you know, 34-year-old
right,
Scott Coles.
Yeah, good for him.
It's good. I think it's a good message for
absolutely
a lot of people
absolutely
out there.
And you know, and he was the youngest guy up there. I'm guessing there was one other guy that looked fairly
37,
young.
Right. Matt Vovogi.
But then the rest of them, it was good to know that we could be handicapping well into our 60s and 70s. It looks like, you know.
Well, Jim Meeks that said, the games passed me by. He finished second.
Right.
He got beat pennies. And he's just talking about the tools. You know, what the young guys talked about.
So I was riding the elevator with the guy that won it last year. What's his name?
Chris Littlemore.
And, I mean, he's real old school.
He's got a paper.
Yeah. I told him in the elevator, I said, this is the most impressive thing I've ever seen. That you made the final table back-to-back. I said, this is incredible.
It's funny because
it's a different mindset, that contest play. It really is. I got to adjust.
I agree. I'm the same way, and that's why I stayed away. I tried, I got introduced to it, John Parada and Johnny D. Mm-hmm. I met Johnny D at the 2006 Horse Player World Series, and they had sponsored they had done some commercials, and they gave John two passes, John.
Right.
Said, you want to come out? And that's where I met Johnny. And I tried to play for a little bit, and then it was affecting my approach the rest of the week.
Right.
And
right.
I just said, you know what? I don't think this is for me. But I'd love the atmosphere. There's nothing like Vegas. But you bring up Littlemore, and it makes me think of that horse player. I've told this story before. There was a kid from Columbus whose father was in harness. He was more a harness. He and his buddies would be out. They were obviously out 24 hours. He'd come down a minute before first post, go to the table and grab the forms, put the forms down. He had a pencil. And he finished, I think, sixth. I've never seen anything like it. I hadn't looked at one thing and just looked at boards and looked at paper, looked at boards. Unbelievable.
I got one of the greatest stories ever about that. I was at the Orleans for one of these contests, and I was with a buddy of mine, Frank Mowbray, and his son, Michael, who are both a little off-center, let's just say. So Michael goes out all night, and we're all sitting at this table, and it's getting near the last couple of races. He hasn't made a pick yet in the contest. He comes down. There's like two races to go. He asks if he can take more than one horse in a race. They say, yeah. He takes everybody in one race and gets like a $60 horse and has a higher score than all of us that have been down there all day on day one. And he just says, I told y'all, and he walks off. We had nothing to say. It was classic.
Give everybody, Frank, a primer here on this racetrack, because it is unusual. And there, you know, the longest stretch, 1,306 feet, or right. 1,308. It's 1,300 something.
What's a few feet?
Making it longer than Churchill. And
what is? I think maybe is Hawthorne longer.
Hawthorne's got long, and Aqueduct's got a long, very long stretch. Churchill's 1,234, and this is 1,306 or 8. People are scurrying now to look it up. and of course, you know, when you've got that long of a main track, you've also got a long turf stretch,
correct,
which is different. And of course, anybody that watches the races on television, the camera angle, you know, you think it's a little bit like Kentucky Downs. You think you're wait a minute, we got another 16th of a mile.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the turf course. I actually adjusted some of my handicapping for tomorrow. After last week in Vegas, I don't know if you've noticed, the rails were out at 27 feet, and you couldn't get wide enough.
Right.
I mean, the wider, the better.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, the rails were back in, and the inside was much more favorable, and most of the races had an inside float to them.
Yes.
So that's going to make a difference. I went back and adjusted some things when I saw that yesterday.
Well, and of course, what's interesting is you've got all the maiden races and the allowance. You've got a lot of turf routes to consider, and we'll touch on it. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us, in about 10 minutes or so after the first break, and you're going to be on. You mentioned you're going to be on with Pete and JK, right? And the money.
Yeah, they call me a little later, and we're going to do a podcast.
Very nice. All right. So you're going to get a double helping.
There you go.
Of Magooey.
I'm around here enough.
Well, listen, that's part of the charm is being part of the scene. And you know, there is no place. It's funny. I mean, there's racetrack characters every racetrack.
Oh, this city's.
But when you start with a city of characters, and then you put them on the racetrack, now you're in trouble.
No doubt. No. Listen, this is like you could go through my call list in my phone. I mean, it's a who's who of characters
all
and degenerates.
All nicknames, right? All goofy nicknames.
I introduced Quigley to a friend of mine that went to the Gulfstream tournament with me. His name's Shane Muscolero, but his nickname's Spike. And as soon as I introduced him as Spike, Quigley says, "Oh, I've never met a guy named Spike I didn't like."
So, you know, can't go wrong.
And there's a story with it that goes with it too. As a matter of fact, the guy was asking him from Santa Anita was asking him what his phone number was in case he had to get in touch with him. He said, "Well, this is my number this month, but it's going to change next month, and it changes every month." So I told the guy, "I said, just don't ask, buddy."
That's great.
Right.
Oh. Let's dive into this, and in this sequence, there's been a weird phenomenon, Frank. The last I don't even know I'd say probably 6-8 years. Really, I think Rachel Alexandra probably established it in the minds of people, and then Gunrunner as well. But there has been this history of a dominant run from both the 3-year-old filly and the 3-year-old boys through this sequence, from the LeCompte to the Risen Star to the Louisiana
Derby.
It goes back
to, I think, Frisian Fire. He swept.
Yep.
It's been a pattern, no doubt about it.
The Ramsey horse.
Oh, yeah, the Louisiana bred. Can't remember his name.
The Joe Sharp.
With Rosie.
Yes. And there was a couple, actually, Ramsey. Ramsey had a couple, I think, in a burst. This year, and
I think there's more competition this year.
I was going to say.
It's deeper.
And you had the prospect of ship-ins. That changed a little bit with the decision by Baffert to bypass both with Chasing Yesterday. If you haven't heard this, Chasing Yesterday and Kingly aren't going to participate. Right. And also, Quip is not going to be here either. He's going to run on the Harlan's Holiday next week. Kingly runs tomorrow in the Golden Gate El Camino Real, a win and you're in for the Preakness.
And I think Kingly's scratch is very important in how the Risen Star will unfold. I think a lot of the trip that War of the Will is going to get was going to depend on how Drayden had ridden Kingly. But with him out, there's not a whole lot of speed in that race. Manawa is gonna go, and if he can, I mean, he's starting. Now, listen, that's a horrible post to start. I mean, he's starting in the grandstand out there in the 13 hole now. But he breaks. He seems like he breaks okay. And if he can get away cleanly and draft in on the side, that's probably where he'd want to be if they could design it. But if he gets hung out in the first turn or has to use him at some point early to get some position, he may be vulnerable late. And at a short price, he's probably worth taking a shot against.
I obviously has to be respected on the strength of that
LeCompte
where he was spectacular.
Right.
And he was uncertain. It was just uncertain how to handle him after the wet track win at Churchill. He didn't really know what you were, let's see what he does on a dry track. And then he buried him.
He impressed me the first time I saw him here. I actually put the first time I saw him work here, I put a comment in my notes that he was the LeCompte winner in my mind.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, the rest of this cast, there's a lot of interest, a lot of intrigue. You know, you should mention Mr. Money got sick, was supposed to participate.
Correct. Yep.
And then very quickly was back in training. And so Brett Calhoun, who we should congratulate on his 3,000th career win.
I did yesterday in the paddock.
There's a guy that's won 3,000 races. And if people started making a list of prominent American horsemen of the last 25 years, I guarantee you they would forget to mention Brett Calhoun for some reason.
Right. He's got a good operation. He's got some good help. I'm very good friends with his assistant Peaches, who's been with him for a number of years.
Peaches. There we go. Another one name, one word name.
Right.
Another.
Right. Peaches' brother works for McPeak. That's Greg Guy.
Okay.
And Peaches is Dennis Guy.
How about that? Okay.
Yeah. Their dad was a trainer. They've been doing this their whole life. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, the Mr. Money full training. I ran into Vicky Foley with Don Winfrey at Liz's.
Yeah, he surprised me running second the last time, Hog Creek Hustle.
Yeah.
And I thought he was more of a sprinting type, but I mean, he ran on well to be second. It was no match for the winner, but he was a solid second.
Absolutely. And Manny Wah held on for third. And Catalano's always been.
Well,
confident.
Doesn't it seem like every big race that Channing's won the last couple of years, he's been on the front end?
He's
so
good.
I don't see why he would change.
He's light up on the back of a horse.
Right.
Hit the other highlights in here. Pluska Parfait.
Pluska Parfait's got to catch a trip. I mean, I was talking to Patrick about this yesterday, and he's not the biggest Leperoux fan in the world, Patrick. So he might take some convincing. As a matter of fact, he probably won't even go for this. But I just don't see how. I mean, he didn't have a trip the other day. He had the 12-hole. He stumbled significantly. He was caught with not much of a trip, and I think he's going to improve off that effort. So if I was given the instructions, I'd say chirp at him out of there, make sure you secure a nice forward position and keep the rail. And, you know, you'll have a shot. He will definitely have a shot if he rides him that way. If he's got too much traffic to negotiate, he may have some problems in a big field. But I got a feeling he's the right play at a square price tomorrow.
Couple of horses that we got to slip in. Owendale, who I was really impressed with. There was that back-to-back Brad Cox double with...
He was good. He was definitely good. The first time he ran, he couldn't get to that Stidham horse that was good. I can't remember his name.
Tackett,
yep. And then last time he got a much better trip, and he ran well. I kind of, when I handicapped this race, it kind of seems like at some point, he's going to be outside of Manawa and not be in much of a position. I thought maybe he might have wound up chasing at some point. And I was thinking that might hurt him a little bit.
A couple other horses I want to ask you about that are local. I mean, obviously Country House is going to get a lot of play.
I saw him today on the track. He looks good, not physically imposing type. You certainly wouldn't mistake him if he's standing next to Hidden Scroll.
Hmm. Well, how about Asmussen and the Winchell Purchase, Limonite?
He's been training real well.
I feel like he's progressive.
Yeah, he's been training very good. And I think, I don't know if he'll need one, but he's solid. I've seen him work a couple of times. He's been good. I think both Dallas's horses at prices are going to do better going longer. And tomorrow's probably not the day, but I think they'll improve, and it wouldn't be surprised to see both of them hit. Either one could hit the board at a big price.
Chase the Ghost, first time facing winners in the LeCompte, which is a big ask, and he ran credibly.
Yes, he did.
Really dirtied up and hidden.
And I tell you what, he's got. I know Corey was riding them both. I don't know how that unfolded. That Mitchell's got this mount, but Mitchell Morrell is one of the best gate riders around here.
Nothing wrong with him.
Yeah, he can get a horse out of the gate. He will have position with that horse.
I can't gloss over Frolic Moore either for Dallas because the nice people from Andrew Farm and On Our Own had interaction with him on Twitter. I know that they're excited, and he ran a good second behind Owendale, and is at least the horse that's going to come running.
No, he's going to be better going longer too.
You know, I put everybody, LeCompte Day, I basically warned everybody to watch out for the Benson runners that, you know, big day, the opening day, Thanksgiving, and these three big stake days, you know that that guys like Amos and Dallas and Al Stahl, big days, big owners, is my theory.
So after listening to you say that, I proceeded to make a nice bet on a Terry Gabriel horse when Mo Gale ran me over with Brian at 11-1. I was sick. I was like, I can't believe this.
A couple of quick hits before we add Marcus Hirsch, and let's go to the girls' race. And, this group, I think we've all seen them, the principals anyway, run nice races, whether it was Jack Sisterson with his first stake winner, Oxy Lady, Leora was a filly that Catalano told everybody about last summer that he was excited about, the two-year-old Leora. She came through at a monster price for everybody. How about Need Supervision, Jerry O'Dwyer, great story.
Yes. He was good. That's what I liked. I liked him when she won last time, but I think the waters get a lot deeper today.
You've got Amos with Serengeti Empress, who was flashy early and then kind of fishtailed a little bit.
She didn't catch much of a trip in the Breeders' Cup. But I was leaning towards Positive Spirit, and I got to see her on the track this week galloping, and it kind of reinforced my opinion. I liked her race last time at a mile and an eighth, and I think the cutback can't hurt her at all. Think she'll get a good trip with Franco, and I expect her to come running.
Let's talk about the other two graded stakes and the Fairgrounds Handicap, probably one of the most likely winners of the day in Synchrony.
Yeah, he's a monster. He's an absolute beast. He was training fantastic before his race at Del Mar, and I actually saw him break off one day behind two other sets of horses and kind of weave through them, passing him. It was scary. So when he ran out there in Del Mar, I made a big wager, and like I think the instructions must have been, see how much trouble you can get him in, and then find a way to finally get clear when the leader's about eight in front and see if you can finish in 21 the last quarter, just so everybody that bet on him knows he was the best and they're not getting paid today. I was throwing stuff. But I don't think they'll hold him off on this with this stretch. He's going really good.
How about in the mine shaft? No Quip. However, there is a couple of horses that are coming back, yep, making their four-year-old debut. Flame Away, who was just so tough like the $2 stake.
And right. He's been training well.
Good to have him back.
I don't know what happened. I think he was entered at Oaklawn, and I think he even had a work at Oaklawn. And then he's back here. I don't know what happened, why he didn't run up there. But he's training well. Lone Sailor looks great. Harlan's Punch, I mean, Ray Cox did a great job with him. And then for a little bit of an outsider, Silver Dust, who performed when the Calhoun barn wasn't clicking on all cylinders, and now they are, he may get another good trip, and he could be a piece. That's a tough race. That's a great race.
There's your graded stakes sequence. There is an all-stakes pick four, and there are three pick fours on the day. You've got the first through the fourth through the seventh, and then the ninth through the 12th. And before we go, Frank, I know we've got the Honor Code sibling, Seclusive, debuting in the third race. How about one notable maiden horse that people should know about?
Well, in that same third race, you've got the second-time Aspius in New Frontier, who took a lot of money that day, had been working well, and caught a wide trip on a sloppy track that day. My comment was chased outside. I got to think that horse is going to improve. And Bourbon Calling, I had a note on him that he had finished well that day also in that race.
Well, there you go.
I can't speak to Seclusive. I haven't seen it work, so I don't know.
No problem.
But the... I think those other two will show up, and that's a great race. The other main race, the fifth race, is really good, too.
Anything to share?
My Majestic Rose, I was expecting her to improve last time on a stretch out, and she didn't show up at all, but I see that Ortiz has the mount. She's been look good in the mornings. I think she'll run back. For a long shot, JD's girl, the Foley horse. You know, Foley kind of has a pattern of heating up later in the meet here.
As the season goes, he brings them in slow.
Yeah, and this horse worked well. I expect better.
What's going on with Proctor? Is he spending too much time in the local haunts?
I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him down here this year. I guess he'll be coming soon. But,
you better show up soon. Yeah, the meet's 55-60% in.
When he gets here, you'll know.
All right. Yeah, exactly. There you go. Frank, thanks so much.
No problem.
Outstanding. I appreciate it. Frank McGowey, everybody. And you don't do anything socially, do you?
I'm a dinosaur.
Marcus Hirsch, come in. How well do you know? Hold on to that for a second. How well do you know Marcus?
I don't know Marcus.
Are you kidding?
I've heard him. No, never met.
Frank McGowey, Marcus Hirsch.
Good to meet you.
Unbelievable. We'll stay right here. There's no need for a break, all right? Because it's we got too much going on, all right? Now you can pass the headset.
All right.
Goodbye, Frank. No, no, I'm just kidding. Thanks a lot. Frank McGoey and first time, long time listener, first time visitor. There you go. I love it. I love it. There's too much to do, and Marcus Hirsch steps in. Marcus, much fuller of beard than the usual.
Yeah, it's called my lack of time to fully shave.
All right,
so I sculpt it.
It suits you.
Yeah.
You used to have just a little, you know, just a little bit of the kind of the hipster growth, but
oh, you had to get in the hipster hit, huh? Hey, I've never met Frank either, but he was good. I mean, I don't think you even need me. He said basically, he covered everything that I was going to say. I mean, we can talk about. I'm not a pop culture guy. I don't know where we'd go. Maybe we'd better talk about the races.
All right. Well, give a quick meet overview. You and I convened before Christmas on that phenomenal card we were so excited about, and it has not disappointed. That December 22nd set of races that's produced some very nice horses.
I mean, apparently they've had a good meet. They raised purses. I think that overall betting at the time, what was that, like 3 weeks ago, was up 16% or something. Hmm. So I would have to express a little surprise at that. I mean, I think they've struggled a lot of times at the entry box. I feel like the general quality is, you know, like you, the big days
have been
clustered, you know, a lot of the best horses. The other days, day to day, like just looking at, the cards have been drawn already. Sunday, Monday, Thursday. There's not anything over a one other than allowance on any of those cards. And that's been a lot of them. But, I mean, you have to write races for your population. So I was a little surprised that their handle was up that much. But I don't know. I think they've had a decent season. The just surface-wise, the main track has been pretty laboring most of the meet. Very few fast days. I did hear that they scraped it 2 days ago, and works were quicker this morning. The turf course has been, they had super wet end of December where they were off turf like 8 days in a row or something.
Right.
But they used it a lot after that. It really kind of wore down with the rail out of 27 feet last week. Looked pretty bad on Sunday. Lots of sand. They put a lot of sand on. There were big gate tire tracks up. But the rail, they took the temp rail down on Monday night or something, and it was down yesterday, so they've got like all that fresh ground along the inside. So the turf course should be in good shape. I mean, people were theorizing that speed had held well on the turf with the rails down earlier in the meet, and that was going to be the trend again with the rail down now after, you know, things got super closer-friendly. It was like the old fairgrounds turf,
and
where no matter
wide.
How slow they went, yeah, come wide, come from behind, and you're good. You can go 52 second half, didn't matter. But I did not see the trends really very much toward front favoring trips in yesterday's card. You know, it's a small sample, obviously, but it's something I want to be keeping an eye on today. I did notice that there was a 19-1 upsetter that to me didn't make sense at all on form, on the grass, slipped up the rail. I think the very inside paths are probably going to be the best place to be on the turf.
Well, and we'll touch on a lot of good turf races, including an allowance and some maiden action. And then when it comes to the main track, anything that stands out as we you mentioned the scraping. I saw that. I saw that being done and on Wednesday. Interesting. And basically suggest watching today and some of the early races on Saturday to gauge.
Sure. There have been a lot of days where closers did really well, and it was kind of tough to hold on in the front, which is a change from the baseline here in recent years, and maybe even early in the meet, if I can remember back that far. I mean, one of the great angles in this whole region has been speed in the first at Fairgrounds. It seems ridiculous, but the front runner in the first race for year after year always seem to hold an advantage. That kind of has even slipped away. I do wonder if the track maintenance processes for this week are going to alter things. I'm not generally a huge fan of speeding up tracks, but this one I think could use it, especially with these younger horses trying to go longer for earlier in their career, which I think, you know, it just increases the amount of fatigue that sets in and maybe leads to a little bit of untrue racing. You don't want a lightning fast track at all where they're going faster than they should go, but if you hit that sweet spot in the middle, I think you get a more, you know, a more telling result.
Well, we've got big full fields for this card on Saturday, and it really, even with Baffert bowing out and with Rudy Brissett also passing on the 13 hole for Quip for his seasonal debut, and can understand that, we still have some important 2018 three-year-olds that are making four-year-old runs. Flame Away returns. Lone Sailor is back as well, although he's already started, but it is nice to see. See, you know, in a year where everybody was carrying on about retirements, there's some, you know, there's some horses around that, you know, we can continue to follow.
Yeah, I mean, Lone Sailor makes his debut. You were right about that. It's his first start since the Breeders' Cup. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, if Flame Away is going to be one of our notable older horses this year, it may speak actually toward the point that people are making about retirement.
Well, he ran fine. Hard hit or tough?
He won the Sam Davis. Wasn't that his signature moment of the year?
Hanging in against the heavy heads, going longer.
How heavy were those heads, really?
As heavy, I mean, they can only be as heavy as they're 126 pounds.
I am on the not a good 3-year-old crop of 2018 bandwagon, unfortunately. But of course, in the fullness of time, yes, you know, we can learn more, and that's kind of what you're getting at here. Is we will be learning more. You know, those two horses that you mentioned, Flameway and Lone Sailor, they're in the Mine Shaft, which is just a messy race to me without any sort of. I mean, I'm going to be casting a wide net there because I don't trust anybody. I mean, I think that Lone Sailor is maybe readier than his work pattern suggests, but he's only worked three times, I believe, and maybe four. I don't have it right in front of me, but Amos said that those horses that were in Florida for their break in December, they didn't do a lot there, jogging and light galloping. It's not like they were really getting ramped up before they got here in late December. By they, I mean Serengeti Empress and Lone Sailor. He might be a little farther along if you just look at the works than she. But still, I mean, they want to run the New Orleans Handicap next month. This is clearly a prep race. I mean, I don't think that I'm not. I thought he was pretty solid in the Breeders' Cup, and he had his moments. I mean, I do think he was a second-tier 3-year-old last year, and I want to see if he's, you know, made a jump at four. But he doesn't have, like, a latitude to not run his best race and win this race, I don't think. You know, if it's purely a prep, which it seems to be, you know, horses will step up and surprise you like that. But he's definitely not 100% from what I can tell. And Cassie basically said the same thing about Flame Away. I mean, they just want to see where they're at with him, what he wants to do most. You know, he's run on turf too. Does he want to be a miler? How good is he? I can't get involved in him. Harlan Punch, you know, was solid last time. Not like he didn't blow your doors off. I mean, talk about an exposed horse. He's run a lot. And no, he's new to Cox, who's done a good job with him. But it kind of, like, his ceiling can't be much higher than what we've seen recently. Silver Dust is the same way. I mean, you may remember him from Oaklawn. He was
absolutely
a big hype 3-year-old. Obviously a lot of talent. He's gelded now. I think that's helped somewhat. He's in more of a pattern. I know your previous guest, Frankie, mentioned that he could get a decent trip. He's plausible, but he's not, you know, one of these horses like Fat Man or one of the more obscure entrants. Like, there are a lot of horses eligible to win this race at a price, I believe.
Crew Chief for Three Diamonds and Maker, the parading gelding, and you know, that off that last when he was second behind Mr. Buff, this came in New York back in November. He's okay. Silver Dust, you mentioned, and he's been just getting better and better and better all through the fall and into the winter. And I think you might have heard me mention, I think you were here, I mentioned about Brett Calhoun, 3,000th win, and a guy who, who operates seemingly anonymously.
He's won two Breeders' Cup races. He's won a lot of big races here. He's got a solid operation. Just was having horrific meat until a few weeks ago. And the ones that were running well, you know, would get touched off and have bad trips, and then a lot of them weren't running well. But yes, his barn is really, he's gotten back up to where he should be, and even kind of above par for the last few weeks. Silver Dust, to me, I don't know the horse intimately, but he seems like it's always been a struggle for him mentally to really get there. And he may be slowly getting there. Now, I mean, like, in a race like this, sure, you can throw out names. I don't like anybody at all. So, you know, my strategy in a situation like that would be to just treat it as a race of numbers, you know, where you try to cover your bases and, like, leverage your other opinions, race opinions, right?
Especially because in the Fairgrounds handicap, you've got a lean that feels like a double A, you know, on your multi-race plays.
Yeah, except, I mean, I'm more and more, you know, I'm like, I really want to lean on, like, horses that are, like, at least 3-1 and hopefully more, because, like, the last round, it was Great Wide Open. That was the universal single in the Turf Stakes on the LeCompte day, who got in a speed duel. I'm like, and he was 4-5. Like, you don't want to be on that. You don't want to be in Manhattan. You want to be on a private island with your lean horses. But that said, I mean, I'm a big Synchrony fan, and I have a hard time. You know, a trip could get him beat. If you want to talk about that race briefly, I do think that, I mean, first Premio is maybe the second choice or something like that. He may, you know, right after he won the last race, Mark Cassie said he probably would skip this race because it was a hard race on him. First race back after a long layoff. I think he was pretty tired afterward. I mean, that was, all indications gave that. He's perked up a bit over time, and then they've decided, you know, let's keep him on a racing schedule. He's doing well enough to run. What are we going to do if we don't run? But he may not run back to that at all. And he did get he was pretty close to a really taxing pace. But it is important to remember that on that January 19th card, that was radical weather conditions. The wind was literally blowing steady 35 miles an hour, gusts to like 45. It was a home stretch tailwind. I had straight into them on the backstretch. So that 22 and change opening quarter in that turf race was wind aided. And all the half mile splits in all the dirt route races from the day, I mean, you're going to see 49s, but that's because they were like running into a gale down the backside. But first Premio was fairly close to what was, even considering the conditions, a strong pace. And I think it sapped him a little bit. I don't know that he has the substance, you know, really to bounce back from that and run the same race again. Could prove me wrong. If you want to, like, I mean, Synchrony was easily the best race in his last race, and he didn't win. I mean, that's full field turf racing. You get in trouble. Combatant is a horse that could be a little bit interesting there. Yes, he's a three-year-old facing older for the first time, and he's coming out of a straight three-year-old race. But River Boyne, who won that race, he would have been first or second in the San Marcos had he not got stopped cold. I've tried to like oppose him any number of times. He's a legitimate animal. I mean, I don't know that he's like a world-class turf horse, but he's at least a solid grade two type versus older on turf in this country right now. So Combatant's form through him looks pretty good, and I think that he's had a good, you know, month, 6 weeks since he's been here. I know he chose one work in 59, which there may have been some variability in different clockers with how fast he went, but the point is that he worked strongly on dirt, and he's probably coming into this the right way.
Combatant seems like Asmussen and the Winchell team and Willis Horton have partnered up. It feels like they're committed to keeping him on turf this year as a four-year-old?
Maybe not. I think this is the race for him right now. But he's done well enough on dirt at times that I wouldn't be shocked if they switch back.
He's made $500,000.
Well,
it feels like he's been a disappointment.
Asmussen makes $500,000 with 10 3-year-olds a year. It seems
yep.
like. I mean, there's nobody better at taking a second or third tier talent from a 3-year-old crop, working out a schedule for them, hitting all the different spots, and doing really, really well by the owners than the Asmussen barn. They do this year after year with these horses.
Second in the Springboard, second in the Smarty Jones, second in the Southwest, third in the Rebel, fourth in the Arkansas Derby, 18th in the Kentucky Derby, fifth in the Matt Wynn, and then started to pick things back up again the second half of the year, and then tried a couple of grass tries that had been rumored, from early on being a scat daddy, and then ended his year getting beat a Zop in the Mathis Brothers Mile, as you mentioned, to River Boyne. And
probably his best race.
That
gives you hope with a late three-year-old turning four, especially when he's relatively new to the surface and was kind of finding his way throughout last year.
So. He's a horse that that was part of what we considered the potentially a all scat daddy Kentucky Derby superfecta. We might have been fun. Let's go to the Rachel Alexandra, talk about the fillies. And I introduced this race with Frank earlier by saying, virtually everybody in here has had a moment in the sun already. And now they're going to reshuffle the deck and let's see where we are. Serengeti Empress, with that early flash in Ellis Park, and then the runoff win in the Pocahontas, and then disappointed, given a lot of time to regroup. Leora was a horse that Wayne Catalano told us way back in the summer after she had had the debut. When we were at Saratoga, Wayne talked about Leora, and it paid off handsomely with that Goldenrod win later on.
Now he only has eyes for Winter Sunset. Leora might as well not even exist at this point. Just kidding, Wayne.
Oxy Lady, Jack Sisterson's first graded stake win as a trainer, of course, with Calumet, and that came in the Tempted. Need Supervision, a nice story, Jerry O'Dwyer. And then after the win in the Silver Bullet Day, he established residency.
Yeah, he kept her here, which has probably been to her benefit. I ended up picking Positive Spirit in this race. The line was made at 5-1 with Chasing Yesterday, who was going to be the favorite in there. So that's not, you can't say it's a bad line, because it's a line that that included a horse who's not running. Also worth noting, Bell's the One is a likely scratch from this race. She got sick. She's over it, but she missed a work. The trainer, Neil Pessin, said yesterday she was 80% likely to scratch. So I think Positive Spirit is, you're looking at 2-1 sort of proposition there, which is going to be really unappealing to me. But I do like the horse. I know that she may have benefited from being on the right part of the track in the Demoiselle, but, like, she wasn't on the right part of the track and won by a half a length. She was on the right part of the track and won by 10.5 lengths. So, of course, make your calculations therein. Also, she's a half to Always Dreaming, right? And she's owned by, somebody who tends to sell horses more than, rather than keep them. So that situation's a little unusual, but I do think that while you might not rate her fully off the Demoiselle, which kind of was a huge jump up for her, I do think she's a good horse. I like the way that she's run. I like the way that she looks. She cuts back from a mile and an eighth. I think Rudy Brissett said that a mile and an eighth from a mile and a quarter is probably going to end up being her sweet spot, and having seen her yesterday, she definitely looks like that type of horse. But I think there's a lot of speed in this race, and I think she's going to end up with a stalking trip and get a good run at it. And I think she's ready. I think she's ready to run her race, whether she gets all the way back to the Demoiselle, and whatever you think about the number she got from that and the trip she got from that, I don't know. But I think she's probably good enough to win. It's just that I don't think that she's going to be fair value the way that the betting shakes out. But Leora, she's going to want to show speed. He entered her, Catalano had her in last week in an overnight turf stakes that he won with Winter Sunset, in case it came off. He has not been eager, from everything I can tell, to run that horse in this race. So I don't know that she's... she won a good race. She won the Goldenrod. She won it by a nose. she got a great trip that day. I don't know that she can do any better than that, and she's probably likely to do worse. Serengeti Empress, I think, has to go to the front. I just don't think that she... I mean, I think she's underdone for this race. I can't get involved with her, really. Street Band for Larry Jones, that, and the buyer came up decent for that allowance race. I don't think that those horses were as good as the horses in the Silver Bullet Day. I'm getting down to a kind of a small nut in this race with Positive Spirit. Need Supervision, who... Obviously, she's going to have to do better than she did last time. She actually ran better, I think, at Churchill than she did last time here. And there are reasons to think that she can improve, namely that she shipped, you know, just 5 days before the race by van from Maryland. Maybe wasn't, like, fully at her best even when she came here. Now, she, as you mentioned, she's had a chance to settle in, training over this track since then. She's got a chance to come forward off that race, I think. She also stumbled at the start of the Silver Bullet Day and didn't have the best of things, you know, from there. Oxy Lady, I mean, she's an underhorse to me. I trust the Demoiselle more than the Tempted. And, you know, while she was decent in the Starlet, I mean, that's kind of a grade one in name only to me until I see otherwise. And so for an underhorse that it's going to be a price again, I'm getting back to Aries 2 for Asmussen, who was second in the Silver Bullet Day. I don't think that she can win, but she stays, and she's a grinding type. And if all the speed shows that I think is going to show, a horse like that could really benefit. I mean, I know some people are on Molto Bella for Wilkes. Grant, you know, she had a blowout win in the Gasparilla. I suppose she's supposed to be, on her pedigree, you know, just as good going long. I'm not sure that she's going to be. And with as much speed as she showed last time, going 7/8, I think she gets involved in the pace.
And I think she breaks sharp from down inside, yeah, too. Although Leperu, we all think of as a guy who takes a hold.
He's great on the front end.
Yes, he is. Very much so. And like all, that, you know, that's a uniform... universal jockey maxim. If a guy is thought of as a terrific off the pace rider, when you put him on speed, they do terrific. Kent DeSormo, a perfect example. You don't think of him on front end, but he's terrific on the front end. Leperu too. Sean Bridgman is terrific on the front end.
Well, and another thing for Julian is, you know, he's European jock, so that's another, that, you know, that's a stereotype that comes as well, where they're going to take a hold and come from behind and not, you know, not be a front-end dirt rider. He's great at it.
Well, and you mentioned the Gasparilla. The thing, Dr. Zick, the dam, she was a 7/8 horse.
Yeah, I think I'm not convinced this horse wants to go any farther than a one-turn mile, but we shall see.
All right, let's dive into the boys' race, and this is really fun. And again, like the LeCompte, it came up with just this deep, varied cast that seems to have hold a lot of potential.
I agree. As I noted in the race preview story I wrote for the Daily Racing Form on this. Since the turn of the millennium, the only two horses have won the LeCompte and the Risen Star. So, you know, often the LeCompte is comparable to a one of an allowance race. And it's so early in the year, it gets a lot of attention because everybody's three-year-old crazy as soon as the calendar flips. But horses that are ready to run on the 16th or the 19th of January, you know, in a stakes race, they've been going... I mean, they've probably been going all winter or just coming back. I mean, a lot of the stronger, true Triple Crown prospects aren't really ready to do a lot then. I mean, they're coming around 2 weeks later. So what you get in LeCompte is horses that went on through the winter because, you know, they got maybe good, a little better at the end of the two-year-old season. And emergent horses like recent main winners or recent lower, you know, first level allowance winners, and generally does not produce you know, a really strong field. I think that, I mean, until shown otherwise, I'm going to guess that this was an aberration to that, because War of Will, I think, I mean, by a lot of metrics, including visually, ran way better than average LeCompte, and I think that I'm pretty sure that we're going to see on Saturday that he's going to validate that. I mean, he's always been a good horse. His turf His turf form last year was rock solid. I mean, he ran some really good races against some of the best two-year-old turf horses in his crop. I don't think he ran his best in the Breeders' Cup, but, you know, the going that day at Churchill was definitely not for everybody. And he just didn't, from what I understand, it was his race at Keeneland that really kind of, he had always trained well in the dirt, they said, even from when he first came over after they bought him in France when he was in New York and they had him at Saratoga and decided to point for the summer. He was training well on dirt, but, I mean, he obviously has a turf pedigree that the dam, as it's been well documented, did throw a long-distance dirt horse. But when at Keeneland, he looked to have that race, the Bourbon, in hand and didn't pop home, didn't quicken like a real, like, top-level turf horse. I think that's when they got in their heads, you know, maybe he has more of the composition of an actual dirt horse. So they ran the Breeders' Cup turf. I think they toyed, the idea of running the Breeders' Cup juvenile instead of the juvenile turf, you know, crossed their mind. But, you know, he looks like a dirt horse. I mean, look at the way he gallops and goes along. He's just a big, strong galloping type with, I don't think, he's not going to have distance limitations. He did some things wrong last time. He stumbled a little at the start. He was too headstrong, I think, around the first turn. He settled down a little into the backstretch. But there are areas of improvement for this horse, who is a grand-looking animal, who trains great, seems to be feeling perfectly energetic from what I've seen this week. He's going to run a good race, I think, and be really tough.
And of course, this race, as opposed to the girls' race, doesn't have as much speed. We know Maniwa is going to set the pace, and there's reason to believe that there's plenty of time and room for Gaffleone, you know, to, what do you figure, maybe at the most three wide? He's not going to lose a ton of ground.
It was wider than that last time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A shorter run to the stretch, to the turn.
Correct. Out from a mile 70 to a mile and a 16th. I think that he'll probably be fine. The only thing about it, as you know, Steve, is when you're drawn that wide, you can't, like, there's no margin for error. You break a half step slow, you have it in your head, and the horse has in his head to go forward. Suddenly, you know, you're either, like, having to send or getting stuck out in the parking lot if you flub the start at all. And I don't even know. What's his morning line price? I mean, I could not believe the money he took last time. I liked the horse a lot last time. Yep. I picked him and was going to bet on him. I think he was 8-5 or something on the first flash. They crushed him. He's 5-2 on this line. He's probably, even with the draw, I think he's going to be heavily bet. And because, I mean, I'm close to going on a rant, but I'm not going to.
You can. This is the right place for it.
For people like me who do public selections and are, you know, touting horses, I'm so tired of taking, you know, just settling for the obvious favorite all the time. It doesn't do anybody any good. Everyone can see. Pretty much no good can come of it. Sometimes you have to do it. Sometimes you're just like, this horse is so superior, and
I'm just going to acquiesce. I agree.
But there are, Gunnett's going to probably run, I believe, you know, with the scratch, he's going to get in. So there are going to be 14 horses in this race. The horse does have post 13. He is a fairly young horse who is like, he's a good feeling, headstrong horse. He could flub a couple things. It doesn't take much, you know, to do enough wrong from that post to be supremely vulnerable. So, in a race like that, with that many horses, you know, it's just like, I can't just settle for him.
No, so. No. And there are candidates that have reason to improve and to, you know, get on the level. Let's talk about some of them. And down inside, Plisket Parfait, a horse that I liked going into the LeCompte, and we talked about. Brendan Walsh, I think, got caught a little flat-footed and was a little surprised, much like Butchie Reed with Maximus Mischief, and thought that their horses were more ready than they turned out to be.
Well, listen, I mean, unlike, yes, I agree. And I mean, I think Brendan knew his horse was, he didn't push him for that. But what didn't happen to Maximus Mischief is he didn't take a big stumble right out of the gate from the 12 hole. That this horse really did. I mean, if people haven't watched the replay, just watch the start of the LeCompte. I'd say that it's fair to characterize that as losing all chance at the start, the way things worked out. And I know your last guest, you know, he said this is the value play, so when other people start saying the same thing that I have in my head, I start to think, well, maybe it's not the value play.
Well, Country House is the universal
the wise guy.
Everybody's on.
He's
Country
20
House.
To 1.
Well, and Diliberto's taking a beating.
I think what happened there is Mike has a lot of stuff to do here. He's got a lot of responsibilities. He clocks horses. He makes the line. He pays a lot of attention to here. I'm not sure how Gulfstream focused he is. If you weren't tuned into social media, you didn't see the race. You know, you're just like, okay, the horse won. He got a 70 buyer. He won a maiden race at Gulfstream. What's the big, you know? He lost to Kentucky Wildcat, who ran okay. Hopefully that horse comes out of his injury from last week at Tampa Bay in good shape, or whenever it was, 2 weeks. It all blurs together. But just on the bare form of it, a 20-1 seems fine. If you weren't tuned into all the buzz and the hype. And Mike Diliberto has been around here a long time, knows the game. Anyway, I think you're right that Country House is going to be... I think that Plus K Parfait is going to be overlooked in the end. I do. And if you go back and watch all his races, he's done a lot of good things. He certainly looks better for the way he came back and held off Harvey Wallbanger at Keeneland, with Harvey Wallbanger mm-hmm. returning to win that race.
That's right.
Totally different position than he was in the KJC. He might have won the KJC if Signalman hadn't cut the corner. And having watched a bunch more replays this week, Signalman is pretty good. I mean, I don't know how good he's going to be this year, but he was a good two-year-old. He ran a lot of strong races, and this horse might have beat him if they'd reversed trips. I think there's something to this horse. I think there's something there. And given I really feel like his trip from the last time is being underrated. And I know that Brendan wants the horse to get out of the gate and get in the race right away. If he does, he's going to have a decent chance.
Talk about Owendale, who I was impressed with. That was a pair of races early on the 17th card, and a very impressive. You and I exchanged notes about that, actually. The maiden win, and then Owendale for Brad Cox.
Correct.
And Owendale feels progressive, as does Limonite, making his 3-year-old debut.
Well, Owendale is progressive. I think I think he's doing well. And I liked his last race, and I'm not afraid to question some of the buyers that come out. I think that's a legit number. That's solid from everything I saw about the track then and that card. And I think he ran a legitimately fast race. Tackett, who he lost to, ended up running poorly in the LeCompte. He's on the shelf right now, but he was good at the time. I mean, that was a step up, and then he took a step up again. And I know the barn is really happy with the way he's training. I saw him gallop yesterday. He looks, I didn't get a comprehensive look, you know, analysis of his entire training session, but watching him gallop around, he seems to be in good form right now. How much better can he be? How much farther does he want to go? He's an Into Mischief. You know, they do fine at middle distances. Sometimes you get him out a little more, you wonder how much they want to do. And is his head truly in the game yet? Because I think that for him, it's been a mental struggle as much as anything. And if he is around four horses of comparable quality rather than, you know, getting past just a lesser group as he did in the allowance race, is he going to dig in and take that step up that he needs to take? Does he have that in his psyche right now? And we'll see, maybe. Who's the other horse you just mentioned?
Limonite.
Oh, yeah, Limonite is good. Tracking. Limonite is good. And I watched all his races the other day. He's done a lot of good things. And I think he's maybe a combatant type. I don't know that he's going to end up being spectacular, like a Derby-winning type horse, but I think he's going to have a good year. He got started a little later. I do believe when Asmussen says that this is not going to be his best race, that it's going to be a progress. He's going to get better going farther, and he's going to get better with racing. Does that mean he can't step up and win? I mean, that wouldn't be shocking, but I feel more comfortable forecasting an underneath good run this time.
What's nice about him, despite that identity and that profile, he's a horse that has proven to be tractable and versatile.
Oh, very much.
And I love that. Lemon Drop Kid, what sire out there?
Very underrated.
It's sire. Unbelievable. He's the Brett Calhoun of sire.
Good one. You should have a radio show.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll look into that. Brian Hernandez Jr., who's come into town for 8 mounts, he's got 3 wins in those 8 mounts, and he knows his way around here, obviously.
Oh, he's a really, really good jockey. Asperson's got a second one, Gunned. I mean, this was a high-profile
horse. Santana was named on.
Yeah. And he's been a little disappointing, but I'm not backing him, but I'm not going to be totally shocked if he runs a much better race. He made a lot of mistakes last time. A lot of mistakes. Wide. He basically took the bid and tried to run off of, you know, midway through the far turn down onto the backstretch. The fight was on, okay? And he went fast. They went fast to the half. He just ran himself out, you know. He's got scope and he's got some ability, and if they can get him going, get his head screwed on right, he could make some massive improvement at a huge price.
I got to quickly ask about Dumpf. There's been a murmur everywhere this horse has gone. There's interest in him.
Really?
I'm
not feeling it.
Yeah, to me he's a turf long-term turf prospect.
And Henley's Joy for Maker as well. I mean, I know they say he's trained well on dirt, and he did have a rough go of it last time when way too far behind a walking pace at Gulfstream. But I couldn't rate him.
And I don't want to let Vicky Foley go unmentioned. The Hot Creek Hustle, who was really game and got a nice placement, chased in the Sugar Bowl behind Gray Attempt, and really has not done all that much wrong.
Well, he lost all chance, you know, in his first dirt route start.
The Iroquois.
Right, which kind of ended up being a red herring to people thinking he was a one-run sprinter. Maybe. He might still be. He might still be a one-run sprinter. I should mention that despite the hype, I think Country House is going to run a pretty good race. Yeah.
So what's your super in here? Who are we using?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I don't play a lot of supers, to be honest.
No, just for,
I've got to keep,
for the public.
I've got to keep Plus K Parfait, I mean, at the price. But I can't – I'm not – War of Will is not a horse I'm trying to run out. I mean, if he loses, to me, he's going to be second or third at worst. I think he's going to run. The two Dallas Stewart's horse, Chase the Ghost and Frolicmore, both horses I would use, definitely. And Limonite I'm using too. There you go.
All right, so you're gonna key off of Plus
exactly
with Country House and War of Will, and then a collection.
I gotta have War of Will second if I'm playing it that way. And you know, the War of Will Plus K Parfait Exacta, I don't think is gonna come back bad in a field this big either. I mean, I'm definitely going to have a bet on that.
Couple of let's do a little lightning round, Marcus, and a couple of maiden races. I brought up Seclusive earlier, the Honor Code sibling. This one for Joe Sharp and the Breeze Easy team.
Yeah.
This was the million.
Going to need longer, probably.
Probably,
yeah,
right?
And probably not set up to win for a stat. I think this probably will be a learning experience for him.
How about the 3-year-old debut in the 7th of Awesome Walk and Roll, Cassie for Mrs. Weber, the $650,000 Awesome again, who is a half to the wonderful Essence Hitman.
They like him. I mean, they're looking forward to running him. Let me try to remember this race. This is a wide open race, and you got the horse that ran well by my standards, drawn way outside in the 12 hole. I landed on Free Speech here, although if it were a turf race, I'd really like him. Street Sense out of Slow Gin. But I do think first time going long, he's going to improve, considerably here. This is an open race.
You've got Golden Tiger in here for Starlight and Spendthrift. This is the Wedding Toe sibling.
Yeah, probably meant to route all along. I was hoping to see a little progress last time. He wasn't bad first time out. I think they thought he was going to run better than that first time out. But he has potential stretching out.
that those are the maiden races. Was there anything else that you needed to make us aware of?
I kind of like a horse in the Colonel Power, who is listed at a fair price on the line. This old campaigner, Wings Locked Up, who's 6-1. He's going to get the same trip he did last time at Houston, where he won comfortably. He's going to sit right off of Leighton Revenge, get first run on the closers, and I don't really think the closers are anything that he has to terribly fear. He's a potential play, I think.
That's a terrible affront to Hoagie.
Hoagie, I mean,
are Hoagie's best days behind him?
Well, I mean, isn't he 20? If they aren't, something has gone crazy with just
he's 10.
Biology.
Yeah, he's 10.
Yeah, okay. He was off a long time. Maybe he's rounding back. I mean, to me, 10-year-olds don't round all the way back into their best form.
Unless they're Ben's cat.
Even Ben's cat was starting to, I mean, he...
At 11, though.
Right. It's a, with horses like this, who are obviously meant to be good older, it's kind of a gradual slope. But when they're off that long, I worry about them getting back.
Although older geldings will keep themselves in shape pretty well.
I'm not worried. It's not fitness. It's just what was it that happened? I mean, something...
They lose a step.
Yeah, something
they just,
might have compromised
they just lose
him.
A step. Before we go, Marcus Hirsch, and of course you're listening to DRF Hirsch of the Daily Racing Form. And Marcus, we should not break without a dream maker evaluation from your perspective.
I think the... I don't know what other numbers he got. I thought he'd get a higher buyer than that. There were a lot
of miles. Conservative figure.
Yes, it is. A lot of mile and a 16th races on the day. I thought he ran legitimately fast. I thought it was a mid-90s type performance, but we'll see what happens with that. I like the horse. I know that, you know, people are concerned with the way his 2-year-old season went, but things just went amiss with that horse, I believe. Starting when he went to Saratoga, he got a bruised foot. Early in that meet, he was supposed to run in the Sanford, missed that race. They went for the hopeful anyway. He didn't look like he had his mind on racing at all there that whole day. He was pulling too hard. He just wasn't focused. He just kind of ran around, and then he probably wasn't meant to run a great race off of that form, the Breeders' Futurity, and then he got annihilated at the start anyway. So to me, it's like, look at see the talent, you know, in his first start at Churchill, know that they really liked the horse. They thought he was maybe their best 2-year-old last year. And then look at what he did the other day. I mean, all the obvious caveats apply. Who'd he beat? He got a pretty, you know, simple trip. But to run that way, first time back, when he obviously had a lot of 2-year-old talent, he could be a monster.
Well, you say that. Hidden Scroll and Global Campaign got the exact same kind of performances, and people were drooling and carrying on.
Exactly.
And nobody said a word about this horse.
Right. And this horse, I mean, Hidden Scroll was obviously, that was freakish.
Yeah.
But a one-turn mile in the slop at Gulfstream is surely less applicable to races like the Triple Crown races than a two-turn mile and 16th on a regular a fast track at Fairground. I mean, I just think that there's more, you know, there's more relevance. Hidden Scroll may be the... He may be at least as talented in raw talent, but as far as the race that he ran and what you know what it might mean going forward, I think you can put more stock in this horse's race than Hidden Scroll. Not that I mean, I think Hidden Scroll's like a massive, massive talent, and I can't wait to see what he does. But yeah, you're right. I think this was, you know, it was on a Saturday. It wasn't a stakes race. You know, maybe was a little bit under the radar. The number that we have for the buyer didn't come back. It's like blow your. It wasn't a 102 or anything, so we'll see. But the plan right now is, I'm sure all your listeners know, is to go to Tampa for his next race, you know, and we'll see what he has.
Looking forward to being in Tampa with Marty McGee.
Yeah, DRF McGee.
DRF McGee.
He is ably holding down the Tampa Fort this year while doing providing great coverage at Gulfstream as well. On top of all the news at both of those tracks, and along with Mike Welsh down there, who's clocking, and you know, Mike does a great job. You know, if you public selections are what they are, but you got to look at Welsh's picks. He does a really good job at Gulfstream. Has a great ROI meet after meet. And don't make your plays without looking at the clocker report and the selections there.
And the same is true, of course, of Marcus Hirsch from Chicago to NOLA and back. And great to have a face-to-face, a sit-down.
It was awesome.
You're on top of it as always. And this will lead to a Louisiana Derby day that, frankly, is going to be hard pressed to equal this card.
Yeah, I mean, but it's going to. It's going to end up being a bump up. Yeah. We got, and there are a lot of good horses here that are getting ready and coming back. And I think you'll see more shippers for the next round, just for all the races. It should be a great day. This should be a good one, too.
No doubt. And it's been a good meet. My second time here for Risen Star. And I think we're going to make this a regular stop on the rotation.
Listen, you should. I always love coming to New Orleans.
How many years? When did they first give you?
I think it was right after the Confederacy surrendered. No. My first year here, I'm so bad with years. I want to say it was the early 2000s. I'm close to 20 years employment, and I think it was the second year I was here. So I've been coming a long time. We used to spend the whole winter here. Now I come to make trips throughout the meet, but I always love coming here. It's a beautiful city, vibrant, interesting, amazing architecture, great food, well worth a trip.
It's the best. And still in the process of coming back from Katrina, and the city looks better than I've ever seen it.
Lots of progress there.
Unbelievable.
It's going to be Park Slope, Brooklyn before you know it.
Started with a hipster reference and ended with one.
Perfect.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Outstanding. Let's take a break. Our first of the morning on the Risen Star Weekend Preview. Nick Tamaro is going to join us next, and we're going to look at Laurel, which absolutely has got a terrific sequence. The five stakes are outstanding, and the two graded stakes, the General George and the Barbara Fritchie, they did not disappoint. You got the three-year-olds, the Wide Country, and the, I want to say Tessio, but it's not, the Miracle Wood, and the John B. Campbell. That our man Tony Black won the John Campbell maybe five times. Back after this to Fairgrounds.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 38463.